let's welcome Julie Kay from Wisconsin, who's going to speak for 25 minutes about that stairway to freedom for steps 1, 2, and 3. Julie.
Hi, everybody. I'm Julie Kay from Wisconsin. I am super grateful to be here with you all, and I am a very grateful member of OA. I am just coming up on my 1 year next week, my 1 year anniversary in OA and my 1 year of abstinence. And I also just want to say thank you to everyone who organized this. This was so well organized. But coming up on that 1 year of being in OA is a great opportunity for me to be able to go back and look at what it was like and what got me here. Because the food was a huge thing for me. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, I am a compulsive overeater. And I did go through a lot of stages of denial with that, which I'll talk about. I definitely was living on denial island at certain points. But, you know, this really has given me an opportunity to look at what was behind the eating and to really focus on steps 1, 2, and 3 and how I got here and what it's like now. So what it was like for me, before I came a year ago, you know, on the outside, my life looked really good. You know, I'm a medical professional. I have a very nice life. And I think that most people looking in would not have seen or really picked up on the room I was living in. I was living in a room, a lonely room, a hungry room. And I think the thing that was really driving that lonely hunger the most was the shame from my childhood. And this past year has given me a really good opportunity to go back and work the steps and look at the anatomy of what led to my compulsive overeating. You know, and I just want to say that I really love my parents. I'm grateful for my parents. They both passed on. However, my mother was an alcoholic and drug addict, a very severe, you know, not a social drinker. She was institutionalized many, many times from the time I was 4 on. And my father and mother both were very intelligent, very well-read, very neat people on a lot of levels. But my father also was a compulsive. He had eating disorders, and he was also a sex addict. So I really came from two addicted parents who were divorced when I was about 4. So that kind of, if I go back and I look through, you know, if I go through step 1 and really look at the unmanageability of my life, a lot of it came from those early years in childhood. My father, who had an eating disorder, spent a lot of time focusing on the numbers. And I grew up kind of thinking that whatever number I had on the scale equaled my value as a human being. And that was a pretty hard place to control, especially when you're growing. But there were a lot of messages there. And, you know, due to my mother's alcoholism and addiction, I ended up living in about 8 or 9 different foster homes between the age of 7 and 15, at which time I ended up out on the street. And I'm sure some of you who have similar experiences can imagine what that's like to be a 15-year-old girl on the street. It's not a place that builds a lot of self-esteem. So that's kind of the background I came from. If I think about some of the kind of shine a spotlight on some of the times that, if I'm really honest, in step 1, I was compulsively overeating. It started, I look back when I was 6 years old, and I remember my family was together and we were watching the astronauts land on the moon. That was 1969. So I'm dating myself here. And I remember the excitement of watching the astronauts land on the moon with my family. But that excitement for me, there was an item of food available to me. And I look back now and I ate the entire pound. I was a six-year-old child and I ate the entire pound of this particular food. And I really felt very uncomfortable. And I wondered why I had done that. It was just, you know, in the excitement of the moment. So there were some patternings that I look at that started way back then. I remember also being in college, and I had three jobs in college. I drove taxi, which was, I have to say, was the best job I ever had. It taught me how to talk to people. It taught me directions. I got to meet all kinds of interesting people and drive around and see the scenery. But I used to do, I think back on this, I was about 20 or 21. I did this for 2.5 years. Is one of my jobs when I was in college. And I used to drive the taxi with my knee. I would have the microphone and a cigarette in my right hand, and I would have an item of food in my left hand. And that's how I would drive around the city, not with passengers, thank goodness, but that's how I would drive around the city. So another part of being honest, because I know when I got in, I was like, am I really a compulsive overeater? Is that really my issue? But when I take the time to go back through step one, admitting that I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable, I could really see what led to that. So there was that. And then I remember it was kind of my family culture to go out and enjoy food. And I remember that my mother and I went to this place when I was in college, and they had an all-you-can-eat of a specific food. And I remember sitting there with my mother, and I had one serving. I had two servings, and we're talking like full dinner plate. I had three servings. I had four servings, and there was no... And it was all you can eat. You might as well not stop. So I remember on the fifth serving, I would go home. And again, just like when I was six, not feel well, I would go home. And I actually spent some time being sick after that. And I thought, well, gee, I wonder what's going on with me. Maybe I have an ulcer. So I really just wasn't in touch before the program with those behaviors and what all of that meant. And you know, I was really, again, when I go back, I look at the shame of being in foster homes, the shame of having a parent who was divorced and completely out of control. I mean, we were the kids that, you know, if mom got upset about something, she'd go over and put her, you know, fist through the neighbor's window. And we lived in a nice neighborhood, and that just isn't how everybody else, you know, managed their conflict. So there was just a lot of shame that would come up at various points. Sometimes it would be, you know, I'd be with someone celebrating a holiday and they'd say, oh, you know, what are your holiday traditions? And I would just flood with shame because we didn't have any. You know, it was like being raised by wolves. And the environment that led to that unmanageability, again, if I'm going to be completely honest, was just growing up in a very, very unsafe home. I'm just going to share one more piece with this, and then I'm going to kind of move on here. But my mother, you know, she had two alcoholic parents, so she really must have had quite a bit of, you know, difficulty in her background as well. And I can't even imagine what she may have gone through, but it did not give her great tools for dealing with life. And before all of the dating sites and the catfishing and all that stuff came around, apparently people used to meet in rehab. And so my mother, recently sober, probably about 24 hours, met a gentleman in rehab who was sober maybe 12 hours, and they decided to get married. So when I'm going back and I'm looking at what my anatomy was, these two came home, and of course they didn't stay sober, And I was about 10 or 11 at this point in time and out of the foster homes and back with them. And so this stepfather, recently out of rehab, decided they were fighting quite a bit. And I remember the moment I lost trust in everyone. I remember the moment I said to myself, I cannot trust anyone but myself. And that was the moment they got into a fight. He came up behind me. I was looking right at my mother's face, and she said his name. And the next thing I knew, he had broken a plate over my head, a stoneware plate over my head. And I remember, I mean, I can just go right back to that. I mean, talk about unmanageability. And I knew at that point in time that I could not trust anyone but myself, and I was on my own completely. So understanding that and going back to that, because I'm not a person who loves to be vulnerable or talk about the past. In fact, that's really scary for me to do. And it is, though, honestly, part of my journey. It's part of my step one is honestly going back and reconstructing, how did I get here? How did I get into this lonely, shameful room that, you know, in my 50s, my late 50s, you know, I'm not able to manage. So I built this beautiful life on top of such a shaky foundation. And until I got into OA and I started really working the steps and turning my life over to my higher power, I was restless, irritable, impatient, cranky. I could not find peace. So what got me here was the eating, but what got me here more than the eating was my emotional dissatisfaction. I remember the day I came a year ago and I just said, I have to do something. And I cried and I cried at that first meeting. You know, I was just so ashamed to have a problem because I thought I had been the only one in the family to dodge addiction. But I just didn't really recognize what my addiction was. So that step one was pretty hard, I've got to say. And then in step two, hope came around. So as I started attending meetings, and I was attending probably not a meeting every day, but, you know, 4 to 6 times a week, I was attending a meeting virtually. And I found just so much hope in step two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And that had been, my faith had been something that had been there since I was a child. I remember promising myself that when I grew up, I would have a horse farm, I would have a home, I would be financially independent so that I never again had to sit under the anger of someone like my stepfather or like the chaos of my childhood or the foster parents or any of that stuff. So it made me very independent. I got some great, great things out of my childhood, which I celebrate. You know, the promises say that we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And that's what keeps me in program. The promises say we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And that is true. Some of these things that are just so hard to admit or talk about are coming true for me in the promises that I can look at my past and I can be free from the emotions of the past. We will learn to comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. And that has been what I have found through this past year in OA. I have to say I am happier today than I have ever been in my life. And so much of that has to do with being in OA and being in fellowship. I don't ever have to be alone again. I mean, I feel like I've been alone since that plate got broken over my head. I mean, really alone. And I feel such a love and connection for all of you guys and the people in OA. For my sponsor, for my sponsees, I just feel like I finally found a place that I belong. And I've also really learned in this past year that my feeling like I didn't belong, my feeling like I was an outsider my entire life is a feeling that is shared by almost everyone. And that was a real mystery, you know, myth breaker for me coming into OA, that my feelings are like almost everybody else. You know, Julie, we may have different experiences.
Julie, you have 10 minutes left.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Tiffany. You know, we may have different experiences, but we all are in this ship together. We're all in this fellowship together. And I really, truly feel that. I feel so good about that. And, you know, step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. I feel like I did that in my childhood, but this has, being in OA has really helped me to practice that on a day-to-day level, to really know my faith and celebrate my faith. And that is just an amazing gift that we have to practice our spiritual principles every day. And I love the opportunity to do that with all of you. And then the promises, again, what keeps me coming back here are these promises coming to fruition in my life. The feeling of uselessness and pity will disappear. A whole attitude on life will change. That has happened to me. The minute I start feeling sorry for myself, I reach out to someone in the program. I did it this morning. I've had a trifecta of several things happen in the last few days, but I have program now. And I'm able to have tools that I can bring out and use that help me to get through those things. And it's just amazing to me that I intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle me. So there are just so many golden moments I could talk about in this program. I want to talk about sponsorship a little bit. That's one of my favorite tools, because prior to program, I was not coachable. I had made a decision at 10 or 11 that I knew what was best and that my life depended on it. And I would listen to what people had to say, but being coachable, not so much. And I have a sponsor that I got as a temporary sponsor, and she and I really have hit it off, and we've solidified our relationship. And that has been a beautiful thing. She's not the person I would have picked. My higher power put us together, and it was the perfect fit for me, but it was not the person that I would have picked. And that's one of the things I love about the program, too, is whether you intend it or not, you end up with the right people. I have wonderful sponsees. I've had a great experience with sponsoring other people. It's a great opportunity for me to go through the neighborhood of the steps over again and review them and strengthen my program by sharing it with others and by allowing their sharing to touch me on a very deep level. So sponsorship has been amazing. The phone, the telephone, another tool I love. I used it today. I called my sponsor and I said, you know, I need to talk to you about a couple of things that are going on with me. And she said, well, that's great. I've got time. And I said, I don't want to take up too much of your time. And she said, Julie, I've been your sponsor for a year and you've never called me. She said, I mean, we do a weekly thing, but I've never called her when I've had issues. And I said, well, I think I called you once or twice, but I called her today, and that's all that matters, is that I was able to use the tool of the telephone today. Things, slogans that I love from this past year are things like push, pray until something happens. If I get really stuck with something, I do go back and I remember that. I have stickies all over my computer. One is compare and despair, or what I like to call a comparasite if I'm getting into that mode. And also this 12-stepping a problem, the writing exercise, which is literature that I have here. And this is something that I use pretty often when I have something come up that's really bothering me. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but that's a tool I absolutely love. I just want to go back and say that, again, my compulsive eating started early, evidenced by the fact that in college my nickname was Jaws. I don't think you get that nickname. I had a friend, she said, "You eat like a man," and she nicknamed me Jaws. So
5 minutes.
Thank you so much, Tiffany. So, you know, getting honest was important. Staying honest is important. Rigorous honesty is important in all of my inventories. And to keep going back and looking at that, I love an action plan. If there's something that I feel like I'm not being nurtured in some way, there's something I've left out of my day, an action plan is a wonderful way to kind of fit that in and look at where I can bring in all of that nourishment that I used to try to get from food. And the real nourishment that I needed was program, fellowship, walking out of that lonely room. So I really, really enjoy having an action plan. And is it perfect? No, nothing is perfect. And perfect for me is boring. I don't enjoy perfect. I do struggle a little bit. I did lose quite a bit of weight, and then I did get a little bit hung up in the numbers, whether I was where I wanted to be, et cetera, et cetera. And that is something that I'm working through right now. So I just look forward to continue working the program, working with all of you, being a part of the fellowship, being grateful. I have so much in my life today that I didn't have before program. And I struggle, you know, it's not a perfect recipe, but I do feel better than I've ever felt in my life. And I would wish for each and every one of you that freedom, and that the promises are coming true in your lives as they are coming true in my life. And I look forward to spending the rest of my life in OA. I'm grateful, 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 grateful to have this addiction. It has been a real blessing, an unexpected blessing in the third chapter of my life. Here, I just want to finish up with a couple of things from the big book that have really been aha moments. And one of those is, they said I need a sponsor. They said I need more meetings. They said I needed to identify, not compare. I didn't know the difference. Identifying, they said, was trying to see how I was like other people I was with. Comparing, they told me, was looking for differences, usually seeing how I was better than others. So thank God, thank higher power today that I understand the distinction of being able to identify with all of you, and I have the relief of not having to compare myself with anyone. I am super happy to have made that distinction. That's page 405 in the big book, and I go back to that one. That's a real gem. Do I have any more time? Are we winding here?
You have a minute and a half.
Okay. I'm going to read another little part here. Page 414. We took the third step out loud, just as they say in the big book, and life keeps getting simpler and easier as we try to reverse our old idea by taking care of the internal environment via the 12 steps and letting the external take care of itself. And all I have to say about that is what a frickin' relief not to have to be in control, not to have to be in charge, and to look to the internal environment and let the external environment take care of itself. I'm grateful. I'm blessed to be with you. I thank you so much for this opportunity, and I thank each and every one of you for being here as witness, and I will pass. Thank you.
Request.